Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device, available now at www.goarcnow.com, and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobilitysystem.com.
Welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Schirakerbrod, here back with one of my co-hosts, Dr. Erson Religioso. And we get one co-host back and we lose another one. So Joe is in Florida with his wife Casey, visiting her family. So making a triumphant transition from guest extraordinaire to pinch-hitting co-host, possibly extraordinaire, is San Francisco's very own Jerry Durham. Jerry, thanks for joining us as the co-host. And that's enough about you, because you're not the guest anymore, which means our guest tonight is someone that I've seen on Twitter and commented snide remarks to once in a while. And recently found out that she's in my backyard as well in Virginia. We've been planning a Chipotle meetup with is Ann Wendell from Prada PT. Did I say that right? Prada?
Prana. Mm-hmm. Thanks
now before I ask you what Prana is, because I've been wondering about that, because I take the P out and I just want to say Prana. Piranha, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We're dangerous small fish.
That's what I was wondering, but okay. Definitely thanks for joining us, everyone, for joining us today. And I know, Anne, you have a ton of expertise, and we've been lucky to have guests that have resumes that if I start reading off their resumes, they'll pretty much take up the entire show. And you are no exception with that, with everything that you've done and keep doing, from having your cash-based practice to fitness to nutrition to being involved as the APTA spokesperson, right, which is a recent gig for you.
Yeah, I had my first official interview as a spokesperson this morning.
Congratulations. How'd it go?
That was great. It was really good. Got to talk about yoga, which was cool.
Very nice. So that's definitely something we might get into. But between the four of us, we have a unique opportunity to talk about marketing in different respects. So again, you have a cash-based practice and are involved in a lot of endeavors. Jerry does out-of-network and has three practices in San Francisco and does courses and seminars, including the one on August 22nd in Chicago that I'll be attending. And Erson and I, we have product companies. So he has his Edge Mobility System tools, and I have the Arc that I created. So I'd like to cover our more actionable advice. So the past three podcasts, we've done a lot of business talk, which we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from. Thank you, everyone, for listening and sending in the emails, which have been awesome to read. But let's talk some stuff that we can share that people can actually use and start doing. So we've had a couple questions on Twitter, which we'll get to, but Anne, being in a cash-based practice, what is your marketing goal and strategy that you imply to get customers to you?
For me, marketing is really about building relationships. I actually just wrote an article for Impact Magazine about this called Marketing is the Manchu. And I got that word from my friend Chris Brogan. And it basically described the community of people that support each other. And so when you think about marketing, you don't want to think about just standing there, you know, screaming on the corner into a bullhorn telling people to come see you. You know, that's off-putting to most people. And so for me, marketing is really just about building relationships with the community, with other business owners, and, you know, with potential clients and patients.
So how do you go about that? What do you have some strategies that you use that you've seen works better for you, things you've tried that haven't worked?
I drink a lot of bourbon.
Well, I think that works for everyone.
Marketing over drinks. No, I'm just kidding. I think really it has to do with just getting to know people and sharing things that are valuable to them. I build relationships not just with other people in the healthcare industry and in the fitness industry, but also business owners. I got involved with a group called the Old Town Boutique District here in Old Town, Alexandria. And it's a bunch of small business owners who do all kinds of different things. One of my friends owns a shoe store, a small boutique shoe store. One owns a gym. And so, it's just interacting with different people, building those networks. Think about people who go into a shoe store and maybe they're complaining about their feet hurting. And, then they can say, hey, we know this great physical therapist and she can take a look at your feet. It's not about what they can do for me. It's about how we can all help each other. And I think that's why the relationship part of it is important.
Yeah, that's one of those big things. So that kind of goes into a question that Andy Parsons at Parsons DPT asked on Twitter is, how do you market for direct access and do referral sources get upset?
Well, you have to think about who are your referral sources. So, I think we tend to think of referral sources as physicians. And with direct access, I think we need to kind of not necessarily get away from that, because physicians are always going to be a source of referrals for us. But we need to broaden our idea of who our referral sources. And so, referral sources can be people like massage therapists and personal trainers and acupuncturists and whoever else is involved in the community. Building relationships with all those sorts of people, I also refer back to them. And so, I guess people could get upset, but, kind of like, who cares? Because they're not the right referral source for you, if that's what's going to happen. I think you just have to really get out and network with a lot of different people who do a lot of different things. And, so I spend a lot of time on my blog and in a lot of the writing that I do for other people's blogs and different groups I'm involved in about direct access. And that's something I try to slip into all kinds of conversations because people really don't know what their rights are as a patient to just directly consult with a physical therapist. So I think that's just on us to do some more education about that.
So it sounds like networking is a big component of getting the word out for you. Obviously blogging, and there's so much information out on blogging about why you should do it, and just the content marketing. So creating content is kind of the new way of marketing. You have to, instead of just saying what you do, you have to tell the story of what you do. And we've covered that a little bit in the previous podcast, is people buy into stories. People love hearing stories and reading stories. That's just how our brains work. And blogging obviously is a big thing for you, Urson, right? You have the manualtherapist.com. You have a huge following. And you've turned that into a business in itself that has a lot of connecting parts that help you with your clinical practice, that helps you with social media presence, that helps you with the edge mobility systems. So how do you market the blog, and how do you generate the content to keep it fresh?
Well, in terms of generating content, I really found that I've only been doing this for 4 years, and I think people for some reason have always thought I've been doing it longer. Even 7 months into it, someone had emailed me and said they were a longtime reader. I'm like, well, how long could you have possibly been reading it? But when you blog daily, I guess it seems like you've been blogging a lot longer.
Seven months is a lifetime, man.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. Yeah, well, I'm 4 years in now. And the one thing I really learned is that in terms of generating content, you can never be too repetitive. And I would always ask, sometimes when I have a writer's block, I would ask on Twitter or Facebook, does anyone have any questions, or does anyone have any cases that they want to share? And the questions were sometimes asked, like, hey, what courses would you recommend? And I would reply, well, I literally just wrote this post yesterday about the courses I would recommend. And this is from someone who reads my blog supposedly every day. So that's when I realized that you can never really be too repetitive, and people need to hear the same things, especially good content, over and over again. And it's probably just due to Twitter and YouTube and texting, just the nature of just snippets of information. You may write like a 5-minute blog post. I mean, if you look at my blog from 2-3 years ago, I would have 3 5-minute videos, and I would write an entire case up and how each visit went for maybe an entire month. And now I just have maybe a minute and a half video. And I feel like if it takes longer than a minute to 2 minutes to read, then I wrote too much. Because when I went back and I checked my metrics on these older blog posts that I spent maybe an hour on, and they had, again, 15 minutes of video, the average person spent a minute and a half on the entire blog post. So it's one of the things I tell bloggers now. Just because of the amount and pure volume of information out there, you really got to just get your message across, maybe summarize it in the beginning or summarize it at the end. And if you have a video, just keep it short and sweet, because you're probably putting too much information. And even if it's great information, people are only going to absorb so much, or they're just going to get bored and move on because they have 500 notifications coming in. So
that's a great point. I mean, all the research it usually points to about 90 seconds for video clips. So if you keep things on YouTube for about 90 seconds and have people, if they're interested, follow up with other links that you have on there. And I see, I don't know about you guys, on YouTube, that when clinics post YouTube videos, one, they're extremely dry. They're just so freaking boring that even after 90 seconds, after 10 seconds, I don't want to watch it anymore. So you have to have you have to sell yourself, right? You have to have that energy, and you have to have a link back. So if you make a YouTube video and it's the greatest information in the world, and even if you put your clinic name, and one of the biggest mistakes I see is people don't put at the end of the video where to go. They don't put,
right,
their clinic or their blog or whatever it is. But YouTube actually lets you put a clickable link into the video. So it just kind of pops up a little bit, which is under their settings, which is really, really important, so people can actually go and follow up. But
well, when you think about it too, I mean, this is what I always ask myself, kind of, what is your intention with what you're doing? So you're not on YouTube with your video to give away all your secrets. It doesn't need to be, an hour long. You're on YouTube to maybe draw people's attention to your blog, or maybe draw it to, hey, that was really cool, I might want to take a course with this person, or, I might want to buy their webinar. So you always have to kind of be thinking, what is your intention with everything that you're doing? If you're writing a book, what's the book for? Because the book's, it'll make you some money, but is the book to sell your consulting services? Is it to sell your DVDs or whatever, your downloads? I think you have to keep in mind what your intent is. And, you basically, people have about a 20-minute attention span for a lot of things, but you have about 8 seconds to capture their attention. And if you don't in those first 8 seconds, then they're gone. There's too much else out there.
Exactly. And I think what you're referring to, or in the beginning of that statement, is knowing your audience, right? You can't market unless you know your audience. And I think that's what you also alluded to in the beginning, is if you're just screaming out into the wind, nobody's going to hear you. And you have to know exactly who you're marketing to, age demographics or population, or the more specific you get, the better it is. One of the things, when I auditioned for Shark Tank, we had a 60-second pitch during the audition. They called it a naked pitch. Right, we had 60 seconds, but everything we read was that within the first 10 seconds, they'll know whether they want to tune into the pitch or tune out of the pitch. So within those 60 seconds, you had to cram in probably about 10 minutes of information, cut out every single useless thing, and tunnel it right to the audience of who you're selling yourself, your product, whatever it is to. And that's the carryover that I've been using with marketing, is I have 60 seconds, and before I market anything, that's what I'm picturing, is standing in front of that producer that holds the keys to 7 to 10 million people, viewers, and I need that 60-second pitch, which is really hard to do, but it's really important to do. So, Jerry, let me ask you, because I'm not quite sure if you're still alive, because I don't think I've ever not heard you talk after this long amount of time. So when you're reaching out to customers...
Hold on, I'm taking a nap.
When you're reaching out to customers, how do you craft your pitch to get them in? So one of the questions we had on Twitter from Craig Johnson at Craig_J123, what's the best way to convert a contact to a customer?
Oh, dude. What, to refer him back to the first podcast. You know, Ann had a great Twitter post last week, and it was just someone had posted about, I forget what the start of it was, but Ann, you can correct me here. It was know your value proposition, identify your target customers, deliver on the brand promise, and that was the success of a business. Is that correct, Ann?
You're actually quoting me, so thank you. That was what I said in response. So yeah, I mean, I forget, the question was about marketing, I think, and those were my three things. Know your unique value, know your target audience, and deliver on your brand promises. Yep.
So yeah, so that was something that's huge. So how do you convert is, you know, how you convert is people are, you know, made a connection with your brand. You got to figure out what that connection is, what their want is. And then you got to focus in on that in the initial conversation. And then you got to deliver on it and you got to over deliver on it. And then that's what's going to create that raving fan, that wow that Bart talked about. That's what's really going to do that.
Right. I have something actually that I can quote Ann on too. She wrote a blog post a couple of years ago and it was about Lenape, right, Ann?
Yes. I don't know exactly how Lenape.
Okay, right. Yeah. I don't know how to say it, but yes. However you pronounce it, it's basically just going the extra mile to service, right? And I think that's, you know, building relationships and just going the extra mile is really, I think, what converts someone as well. When they see that you really care and you really care about their well-being and they're not just like dollar signs to you. I mean, I think one of the biggest things I could ever tell people, the best way I ever marketed, and after 7 months of opening a private practice in a very heavily congested area in Buffalo in terms of outpatient PT practices, my former business partner and I found out 70% of our patients were self-referred through direct access and did not come from doctors. And it's just because we were doing a good job.
And what were you doing? What was the good job? What was...
I would say for me, it was probably getting people in and out in half an hour, but spending the entire half hour with them. You know, I would spend up to 45 minutes with them one-on-one after the eval. The eval was always an hour. I never double booked. If they were 5 or 10 minutes, 5 minutes late, I would take them. 10 minutes late, I would make them reschedule. And I think people understand that. And that way I was never backed up. And also basically getting the majority of people better in 4 to 6 visits. And, you know, when I would tell people that, they would think that I meant months and they didn't understand. But yeah, when you're known as the guy who gets people better quickly, then word gets around.
Especially in Buffalo, because there's nothing else to do.
Yes.
There's just no,
hey, Gene.
What's up?
Gene, can we go back to that convert word? Because I think Craig's got a excellent question, and you know that's what I love. But, you know, to convert that very first contact into a paying customer is the key, and that's lead conversion. And I think what Urson's saying is 130% correct. That's delivering on the brand promise. So to convert them into that paying customer, again, you've got to hear what they want. You focus on that part of the phone conversation so that they can, so that they know that when they come in, they're going to get it. And then like Urson said, you deliver on it. And then 70% of your business is them telling other people they should go see you. So that is the process on how to convert a lead into a paying customer.
And that's with a conversation, right? You're talking with them and
you got it.
You have to have that one-on-one. But let's say we're not having a conversation. Let's say we're marketing content or we're marketing ads or more digital. So let me ask you, Ann, with a cash-based practice, how much emphasis do you put on people finding you via your website, or I don't know if you do any Facebook ads or Google ads or anything like that. Have you dabbled with that, or is it even important, or is it mostly networking, like you said?
I have actually never taken out a paid ad anywhere, Facebook, anything locally, nothing like that. you know, for me, I like to write. And so my writing was basically kind of creating an online footprint for me, you know, with all the blogging and articles and things like that. And I always like to say, you know, marketing for a cash-based practice shouldn't really be that drastically different from marketing for anything else. You know, people are people. And there's really, I hate to say this, but there's no magic secret to marketing for cash-based. I mean, I know my audience. I know who my ideal patients are. And the great thing, when you know and you have it drilled down exactly who your target audience is, what they're looking for aligns with what you're offering. So it kind of goes back to the unique value. When you know what your unique value is, you don't have to convince people to come see you, because their unique value matches yours, and they're going to value the things that you're offering. You're going to be a great match. And, you know, when I consult, because I do some consulting with people who are looking to start practices or add cash-based services, and it's something I have to get through to everyone. Not everyone is your patient. And I know, I'm sure Urson went through this in the beginning, too, with starting a practice. You know, we all probably did. In the beginning, you want to just take everybody because you're like, oh, my God, I got to fill up the books and things like that. But that's the way to make yourself really unhappy in your practice. So everyone is not your patient. And the sooner you realize that, the better. And when you really drill it down to who your perfect patients are, you can attract them to you rather than running around trying to find them.
Absolutely. That's such an important point. And I mentioned this in one of the previous podcasts when we were just getting started with the ARC and we did our Kickstarter campaign. We had an investor contact us just because he was interested. So we were talking back and forth, and he asked me a question. He asked me, who is your audience? Who can benefit from this? And I said, everybody. And he said, okay. He said, okay. Because we're talking and I'm giving you advice and you're starting out, let me tell you something. If you're ever looking for an investor and you say something like that, you're done. You might as well just pack up and leave. He said, there's absolutely no way you can say that, because even though everybody might have a use for it, not everybody's going to buy it. And you have to have that honest conversation with yourself and who is your audience. And yes, everybody can benefit from PT, absolutely. But you need to know your demographic. You need to know your area where your clinic is going to be. You need to know who has insurance. You need to know the per capita income. You need to know so much stuff. And from that, you start tunneling it in, and whether it's a niche or not. But that goes into the whole research of it.
Yeah, when you're the person answering the phone, because I don't have a receptionist or anything.
Oh, boy, Jerry's going to be all over this.
But when you're the person answering the phone, you get really good at this. And so I can spot it within a couple seconds if a patient is my patient or not. Or, you know, I can kind of tell if their first question is, do you take insurance? That tells me something right off the bat about what's important to them and what they're looking for. Now, you know, some people can go either way, and you can kind of get a feeling for where they are with that. You know, is some education and a conversation enough to help them see the value of possibly going out of network? But if they're dead set honest with you, like, I cannot afford this and I can't go out of network, then my thing is, here, let me refer you to these two other places I know in the area that offer great care, and they're going to take your insurance and you're going to have a great outcome with that. Because my goal is to get the patient to the right place. I have gotten referrals from people who have called me to come see me. Or sometimes it's someone who has Medicare, and I can't treat Medicare patients in physical therapy. So I've referred them elsewhere, and they're, you know, initially sad, like, oh, I really liked your website, really wanted to come see you. But then guess what? When their neighbor slips and breaks their ankle or something, they'll say, you know, there's this great therapist. She helped me find my therapist. And if you can do it, you should just go see her because she has this great practice. And, you know, so you're looking to match people up with the best person who maybe might not be you. And, you know, we should all know other good therapists in the area that we can refer to.
Right. I think part of what I tell patients as well on the initial encounter is I also have an exit plan for them as well. And you know, my leash, especially being cash-based now, is two visits. And I say, unless they're basically a chronic pain patient, chronic whiplash, fibromyalgia, kind of centrally sensitized patients, I basically tell them, if we make zero changes in your compliance, and I couldn't do anything for you in two visits for function, range, whatever, anything you could measure, then I will refer you out. But I do have other people that I would go to myself. And again, that's all about building relationships. I think physical therapists are hesitant to refer out, whether it's to anyone else, to a doctor, to an ortho, to a chiro, to a massage therapist, to a psychologist sometimes if necessary. And you know, I have this short network, small network of small practitioners also. Usually they're not big box clinics or huge neuro practices with a bunch of PAs that I would go to or I have gone to myself. So patients need to know that you have alternative strategies. And again, you have to, it's a relationship, you know, every relationship typically is give and take. It's not just give, give, give. And I think one of the biggest mistakes when people go out and market is they just go out with whatever food they can afford that's not nearly as good as, you know, a farm rep. And it's just like, hey, I'm great, give me patience.
Yeah, and that goes to Ann's earlier comments about focusing on helping others and doing something for somebody else. And I think that's the kind of the secret of networking that a lot of people don't understand is that when you network, when you do it wrong, you're so focused on furthering yourself and your cause. You limit the authenticity of who you are. So if you go out and network and you genuinely want to help other people, then other people will help you. That's what always worked. That's what I found always works. I don't know if you guys feel differently or not. But being authentic to you and who you are. So like you just said, Erson, it's if you just bring sandwiches to physicians and put on a show, that's not authentic. And that's definitely not going to come through when you're doing a B2C or business to consumer marketing. And that's kind of important. And Anne, I know you mentioned the website in passing. I think that's really important on websites because the website's still the gateway to you, to your business. And what I see a lot of times with websites is clinics describe what they do, right? They say, we do this, we do these techniques, this is what we do, this is what we do so well. But people don't really care what you do. People care what they will feel like and how it will help them. So words that are actionable to them, like you will feel better, you'll be able to move better, versus this is what we do. We do dry needling, we do running analysis, things like that. So little changes in the psychology of wording is so important for people to feel comfortable. And then on the same topic of words do not get as much attention as pictures, and pictures do not get the same amount of attention as videos. That's marketing, that's advertising, that's proven in a lot of research now.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of experience with that, obviously, since I've been doing this for a while now. And if your blog post doesn't have a gravatar, which is a picture that's attached to it, people are not going to click on it. It doesn't matter how good the content is. And, you know, if you have to put like a picture of some sexy guy or girl on there to get people to click on it, that's fine. You know, I know my buddy, Dr. John Rusin, he does that on all his blog posts and people click on them. And, you know, that now that Facebook actually has autoplay, I'm sure you guys have noticed on your apps and on the web apps, basically, that unless you shut it off, Facebook autoplays every video. And again, I can have a blog post with a great video in it and maybe a couple thousand people click on it. But if I just share the video directly, you're looking at sometimes twice that or 10,000 people engagement just because everyone's engaged. It, as soon as you're scrolling past it, it starts playing versus you have to click on the blog post to see the video otherwise.
Yeah, Facebook is incredible for advertising, and I spend a good chunk of time and money on Facebook advertising for the ARC. And so I've been Facebook advertising, and Google AdWords is huge for advertising, and not enough clinicians are doing it. And I think if you really get comfortable with it, and I think it's definitely doable, because I pretty much taught myself with all the awesome stuff out on the interwebs right now. And so Facebook makes it almost, I don't want to say idiot proof, but they make it really easy.
Yeah.
That to do it, as long as you have a good image. And again, the wording, that's up to you. But you can have, first of all, make a Facebook page. If you haven't made a Facebook page for your clinic or business or whatever yet, just do it. It's not that hard. and you can, whatever you're sharing, you can share on there. But through there, you can do promoted ads. And all that is you put a Facebook post on there and Facebook lets you boost it. But when you boost it, you can tune it to a specific age, location, and keywords. Now, keywords are so important for Facebook, for websites and SEO optimization. So when somebody searches you, it'll pop up in Google searches. And same thing with Google Ads. If you need to have keywords that are important to your business and company, and you can use words that are common for your profession, or there's websites like BuzzSumo that you can type in a keyword and you can see how many times that word's been shared and looked through on various blogs and search engines. So you could actually use science. We're all about evidence-based practice, right? So why aren't we evidence-based research and marketing? It's the same exact stuff. There's so much out there, so let's do it. But what about out of network, Jerry? When you're in San Francisco, which is, we talked about before, super competitive, right? How do you market and how do you make it stick or make it a little bit more interesting based or compared to your competitors?
Interesting.
Well, interesting.
It's always going to be.
Well, with you, it's definitely always.
Yeah, it's the shoes.
You are correct. I just walk around with my pants pulled up so you can see my socks. You know, it's interesting. I totally agree. I love what Urson's doing, and I totally get what he's doing and getting all that business through the word of mouth by delivering on that product, by delivering on the brand promise once that customer comes in. And I totally agree with that. I still believe, especially with where I am, that my dollar, the biggest bang for my buck with a dollar is going into a healthcare provider's office who's going to see, you know, 100 people this week who can benefit from physical therapy. And my goal is to build the relationships with those people, get that client customer in my door the first time through them, because I believe that's the best use of my lead generation dollar. They get in the door, then I deliver on the promise, I do everything else, then they become the word of mouth marketing for me. So my lead generation plan is a little different, even with the out of network stuff. And that is a challenge because I have to convince, there is no worse, and that's what's funny because I'm going to contradict a little bit, but the biggest barrier to me getting more calls and more lead generation is other doctors calling my office and going, well, are you in network with Blue Cross? And my answer to them is, you know what, I'm going to take care of your patients clinically. I'm going to take care of them in every aspect, and I'm going to check their benefits for them, and they're going to know their costs before they arrive in the office. Is that what you would like for your patients? So that's a yes or no. So I actually use that question to help show my value. But man, when doctor's office are calling, asking them if I'm in or out of network with people, a lot of times I shrug my shoulders with the ones I have relationships with and say, do you want your patients to get good care or do you want them to go in network? Which one would you like?
So with getting into physicians and easy, Jerry. Easy, Jerry.
Yes, I know. We don't market to physicians anymore.
Somebody getting hungry? No need to bark at us, Jerry. When you're getting into physician's office, do you have a strategy for that? Is it the lunch that we talked about, or
It's been 14 years. I've never, ever, ever bought lunch for a healthcare provider that I didn't have a relationship with, ever.
How do you develop that relationship?
So the key is, you know, is
fancy socks. Getting,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, as a gift. No.
He said he would drink food, but he didn't say anything about
alcohol. No, nothing. No, nothing unless they arrive, unless the patient. So here we're back to my whole lead conversion, lead generation, tracking your calls. The easiest, simplest access into a healthcare provider's office is the client that's the customer that's already in your office. So I get people who find me all the time with healthcare providers that I haven't been able to access. So now I have an immediate access point and I have a strategy in place for people. I'm going to get them the eval summary. I'm going to, you know, have the marketing person drop that off along with the business card saying, hey, we have your patient, John Smith, in our office. Just wanted to drop the eval summary for Dr. you know, so-and-so. And by the way, here's my business card. We'd love to help you with more of your patients, and turn around and walk out the door. And then I let that sit. And then we have a calendar and a strategy in place of how we get back to that office. But that is my, I'm not showing up, you know, and I love direct mail, believe it or not. So we continually pummel on a regular rotation, doctors within the area with direct mail. And the key to that is just to have our logo and our real quick brand promise on there. So no matter what, people are familiar with the logo and that we create happy patients. So and that's really my strategy, is using those customers that are already in the door to access those healthcare providers.
So it's that repetitive nature of everyone seeing your brand and your company over and over and over again, kind of what Ersin was talking about earlier, is that the repetitive nature of seeing the product, which is pretty common sales.
Yeah, it is real common. And again, I'm a big believer. Everything I do has been done in another industry, thank God. So I didn't have to invent it, because, all the time and energy that went into inventing that. So just bringing the sales and marketing in from other industries. Let me mention something else that I just mentioned as far as why. And again, I don't disagree with people going straight to the public. I'm just telling you why I believe this approach works best for me and my practice is, I've mentioned this before, our brand is obviously growing in the community, because as I've gone out of network with every single insurance carrier, my calls have risen over the last 5 years. So every year over the last 5 years, and that's as long as I've been tracking them, my calls into my office have increased. So that to me is that brand awareness is floating around out there. And regardless of who has to pay, people are still seeing or still sharing my name to call this office. And I say, you know, give me the opportunity to convert the patient. That's what I tell the providers too. Give me the opportunity to have a conversation and talk to your patient and let them decide. It's about choices. Let them decide if they want to use services or not at whatever cost it is to them.
Yeah, and that's a great point. The point is that if you have a constant brand awareness, even if people don't know what your brand is, if they see it over and over and over again, eventually they'll say it out of either social context or name recognition. And your point about using other either companies or other professions, other fields is so spot on. And we do that all the time at Verve with the ARC when we were starting out. You know, we were a startup, so we don't have the resources of other companies, but we still use them. You know, we look at Apple all the time. We look at Starbucks. We look at every big company, because they spend millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars on website development, on word choices, on advertising and things like that. And you look at the themes that they use and the words that they use and how they put things together, and you don't have to obviously use them exactly, but you can see how they do things. And but the one thing, and then talked about this earlier, is your story. Right, people want to know your story, because another thing somebody told me in the early going is people don't care about your product. They don't, because they don't know your product. People care about you and who you are and your credibility, and then they'll go to the product. So, Anne, let me ask you, how do you share your story with people? How does that come across? How do you tell them who you are and have them buy into that?
I think, you know, that when you're starting your business, whatever it is, your practice, your product, whatever, you really want everything to be on the same page, basically. So, you know, I always tell people that I'm consulting with, and when I'm speaking, I'm always saying that everything has to be authentic, and it has to be a good representation of you. So everything from your logo to your website to your marketing materials, you know, you want to present a seamless, view of your brand. And so I think that being authentic is probably really important. What was the second part of the question you asked? I'm sorry.
How do you share your story? How do you let people know about it?
Well, and I think too, you know, for me, I share my story through my writing. And so, you know, I've been really open with, you know, one of the struggles that I have is that I have an autoimmune illness called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And so that that kind of led me down the path of doing more of the nutrition and the lifestyle consulting and things like that. But every time I write a story for, you know, Washingtonian or Washington Post or something like that about my struggles with being diagnosed with an autoimmune illness and the things I've done that, you know, have allowed me to really get back on track and function at a high level, it's amazing how many clients I get from that, because people identify and they see, well, you know, this happened to you and these are some things you did and I think maybe you can help me with that. And so it wasn't my credentials and my PT degree and, you know, all those things that we as practitioners think are important. It's that they thought, you know what, this person might listen to me and might have some empathy for what I'm going through and might actually have something to share with me. So yeah, that comes from being authentic, because you don't always want to share all the things that are going on that are struggles in your life. But, you know, for me, that works. I mean, people want to know that you're going to connect with them as a real person. And honestly, if your homepage on your website just said, "I listen," I bet you'd get patients from that. I mean, think about how rare it is to find a healthcare provider who wants to listen to you. That would be a big draw for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key of the sentence would be "I," and it's the small changes, even if, and this happens a lot as well in websites and even blogs or corporate blogs from a company, is people always say we do this for you, we do that. But if you switch that "we" to an "I," when it's from a person to person, like you're reaching out, like you're having a conversation via your content, that makes such a big difference with how people perceive it and how much more engagement you get with small changes like that, which make a big, big difference. And the fact that you're willing to share that piece about you that is normally personal, right? People make that connection with you, whether they have the autoimmune disease or not. Everyone at some point has had something that they probably are not comfortable telling somebody else with. And as soon as you share that on a wide scale, that resonates with a lot of people. At least that'll resonate with the audience that you're trying to reach in most cases, right? So that's an important thing. And your story has different parts. Everyone's story has different parts. And that means the way you introduce your story can be different to different people. And it's that psychology of conversation. When somebody asks you a question, "Oh, do you have any kids?" And you can say, "Yeah, I have a 3-year-old. And that's, you start that story at that point and see where that conversation goes. Or if somebody is not from the U.S., you say, "Oh, that's an interesting name. Were you born here?" And they say, "I was born somewhere else." And I could say, because I was born in Ukraine, I could say, "Well, I was born somewhere else. I was born in Ukraine as well." And that's, my story starts there. So it's always adjusting your story, not having a script. That's the big thing, is don't have a script. Be in the moment. Be authentic. We keep saying that, but that's what it is. It's just being in tune with the people you're talking to. And Ersin, how do you get in tune with people that you don't see face to face when you're talking with in comments, or you're talking with your fans and blogs and things like that?
I remember it was one of the ortho professor for University's Pittsburgh DPT program, Chris Bice, and he basically told me that in terms of being a rock star, you don't only necessarily want to be a rock star, but you want your fans to feel like a rock star's fans, but not necessarily in a disengaging way. So
not groupies, or maybe groupies.
Well, maybe, yeah. But basically, I always told myself, if I ever obtain any sort of status that other people would deem big, that I would always remember the little guy and always treat them like gold, and basically how everyone deserves to be treated, the golden rule. And I've tried to get back to people, tweet them, Facebook them, email them within that day at least. And you know, it's a lot of customer service. And again, 4 years ago, my wife said, you're on the computer too much. And now that this has pretty much changed, my entire career, that she understands that I need to do this, but it also has enabled me to spend more time with my family. So I think it's just about just not getting too argumentative and just being genuine, but also just overwhelmingly positive. If anyone's going to be a dick to me online, I basically just block them and you know, I don't argue. I don't use Twitter as like 140 characters to argue incessantly over minutiae that can't really be proven. So, you know, I think it's, again, important just to be genuine and to treat everyone respectfully.
I think that's pretty much a motto of life, right?
Right, yes, yes.
Well, my thing is, you know, if you ever see me tell anyone to have a nice day on Twitter, that basically means, you know, I'm done. I'm not continuing the conversation. So if you see that, you'll understand.
Oh, well, I'm glad you never told me that, Ann.
I need to look through all my tweets now.
Right, yeah,
I might want to check yours.
Jane, you may want to look through your tweets daily for that.
That's true.
That's why we haven't spoken in so long.
Like, well, Urson, speaking of dealing, you know, with the public, that was kind of how you and I think you were probably one of the first people that I met on Twitter and got to be friends with, but you and I kind of bonded over a situation I was going through. And, you know, when you first start interacting with the public in that kind of a forum where everybody's got an opinion, it's really difficult at first. And, you were very helpful to me with that. And so I learned exactly what my purpose was and who I was there for, who I was in the public eye for, and it's my target audience. And so everything else is just noise in the background, and you really do learn to tune it out. You have to, otherwise you can't be effective at the message you're trying to get to the people who actually want to listen.
Right. Social media gives idiots a voice, basically, and you just got to learn to stick with like-minded individuals, and, you know, your relationships and your circles should just be, you should just surround yourself with positive people. So, you know, if you want to hang out with a bunch of negative people, I guess that's cool, and we all know where they hang out, but I just use that forum kind of as a block list.
There you go. Not enough time in the day to deal with stuff like that. So yeah. Everyone has a goal. Well, Ann, I wanted to talk to you about all the other stuff that you do, but I think we might have to save that, have you come back on and talk about some of the awesome nutritional stuff and fitness stuff you do as well, if you wouldn't mind coming back at some point.
Well, that would be great.
So you said you do a lot of writing. Where can our listeners find some of your writing or your website or your practice, anything that you want to share without saying have a nice day at the end, please?
Sure. My website is prana, prana-pt.com. So I have all of my blog on there going back to the last few years here. I also do a lot of writing for a group called Girls Gone Strong. I serve on the advisory board for them, and I write a monthly column for them called Ask Ann, where readers write in with a question that pertains to physical therapy and injuries, and so I answer that. That's their monthly. I am also on the editorial board of Impact Magazine. That's the private practice section of the American Physical Therapy Association, and so I do frequently write articles for them. I write for a magazine called BossFit, which is online, and I've done some writing for WebPT. I did a monthly blog for them for about 2 years. I'm taking a little break from that right now, but there's lots of information on cash-based practice, marketing, value proposition, opting out of Medicare, all the kinds of things. If you go on WebPT's blog, you'll find all that there.
Good Lord, do you spend all day writing?
No, I also treat patients and lift a lot of kettlebells, and I have two teenagers. So no, I write as much as I can because, you know, I like it and I'm passionate about it. So, you know, I don't watch TV and don't do a lot of other things, but I do like to write.
Good on you. People always tell me that they don't know when I find time to sleep. I mean, you put me to shame.
Well, we established the fact that I go to bed by about 9.
Yeah, that's right. I figured that out yesterday as I'm up at 1 a.m. doing marketing stuff on Facebook.
Oh, is it your bedtime, Ann?
It's almost. I'm starting to just, you know, fade out here. about 19 good minutes left in the day.
That's fantastic. So if you haven't seen Ann's stuff, definitely check her out. And on Twitter, just don't get her upset or you'll get have a nice day. Jerry, what about you? I know we've shared a lot of your stuff as well, including your website and your seminar on August 22nd. By the way, if you haven't signed up for that seminar yet, and I already told you that I'll be there, and Jerry will be there, and I'm going to be pestering Anne for the next 2 to 3 weeks by sending her messages, tweeting her, and texting her to make sure she goes as well. If you haven't signed up yet, go to entropy-physio.com. Yeah. It's also on the website, therapyinsiders.com. Sign up. We're going to talk business. We'll talk marketing. We'll talk whatever you want to talk to make your clinic and your practice better. So sign up. It'll be a good time. It'll be a hell of a brunch after the good time.
Sunday will be a good time.
Where can people find you as well?
Twitter, Jerry _Durham PT, simple enough. You know, my business website is SF Physical Therapy. If you Google SF Physical Therapy, it's the first hit you get. You can see a little more about my practice, less about me, more about why we exist. And just looking forward to August, and always happy to have a conversation with anybody who wants to talk about the business side of physical therapy. If you want to talk about how to treat a patient, I recommend you call one of the other three people on this podcast, because the last person you want to talk to about clinical physical therapy is me.
Well, speaking about treating patients, brings me to Urson, and you have a new endeavor starting up. Do you mind sharing that?
Are you talking about my fitness seminars for coaches and athletes, or the one where I set up websites and social media integration for clinicians?
Literally within a day, you come up with a new thing. Yes, the second one. Good Lord.
I just try to have my hands in all things. I mean,
How many hands do you have?
I do have two, and I don't know where I find the time either, I guess. I go to bed at midnight. That's probably where. Edge Health and Tech Solutions is the website that I just developed, because, you know, I'm self-taught in terms of HTML coding and blogging, and I just learned how to use all of Google's platforms to turn Blogger into just a normal website. And it's just a cheap way to host. And I use, you know, Google Apps as basically very cheap HIPAA-compliant EMR.
Yes, we know you love Google.
Yes, I do love Google. Google greater than Apple. And
easy now.
Right. So, you know, just all the ways I integrated that, and using HelloFax for faxing, and the way I do online scheduling, use Google Voice to transcribe voicemails if I can't answer the phone from a prospective patient. It's just a very, very inexpensive way for a sole proprietor, which is typically what most cash-based practitioners are, to start out. And you just want basically as low overhead as possible. And putting together a website and integrating all that social media and you know, having EMR and using technology. I started getting questions the more I started blogging and, you know, talking about this at seminars, and could you do this for me? So because I did it for about 3 or 4 clients, and I could now put together a website over a weekend, I thought, why not offer this as a service? And I don't want this to exactly take off, but I figured that, you know, one a month, if I can help one person just transition maybe from working for someone, or even just getting their own cash-based practice on the side on the weekends, I mean, I think that's worth it. So it's just that, and it's alternative modes of practice, like the practice within a practice like I used to do, and now cash-based. And there's that. And then also a buddy of mine, Chris Nentars, we just started seminars in addition to my eclectic approach, which is for clinicians. We just started mobility seminars for like coaches, fitness athletes, and CrossFit. So
there you go. So that's Urson's new endeavor. And probably by next podcast, he'll have 3 more to share with you. So,
I will.
So check that out while it's still fresh and going on. So again, thanks everyone for joining. And do you have any final closing thoughts?
And sleeping.
Anne's got the bourbon going.
I haven't even had any bourbon, but I am about to start snoring. No, I think what I just want to repeat to everybody again is that not everyone is your patient, and you really need to know yourself, your own unique value, and your target audience. And if nothing else, those things will set you on the right path.
Agreed. So if you guys have any questions, it's therapyinsiders@gmail.com. For a bunch of the clinicians that are emailing me, yes, I send out samples of the ARC for clinics to test out if you want to test it. Send me an email. You can use it. You can try it on your patients, on yourselves, to know if you like it. We have different programs for affiliate programs that all you need is a website, and you can put, you get a custom link, and you would get 30% of commission from any ARC that's sold via your website. But we still do all the shipping and everything, and we also have wholesale pricing for clinics. But yes, I'll send you one if you want to test it out. If you don't like it, you ship it back. If you like it, we'll sell it to you and discuss that. Also, keep the questions coming. We love all the, obviously, the Twitter questions and everything else that we get via email. Thanks a lot. You know, we like spreading the information out, and thanks to awesome guests like Anne, we can really get into specifics of it. If you want to know more about Facebook ads or Google ads or anything more technical like that, also feel free to send me an email at therapyinsiders@gmail.com. So thanks, Anne. Thanks, Jerry, for filling in as co-host. Urs, welcome back. Glad you're feeling better. And hope we got some good information out there on marketing.
Thanks, Gene.
Thanks, Gene.
Thanks, Gene. Absolutely. Thanks, Gene. Go Giants.
Go O's.